Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker, recovering after having returned to work following a lengthy holiday. I am now, of course, planning my next holiday. Such is the great circle of life. This is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old gracelessly. Sharing with you today all the games that were. We're going to talk about what's coming in with incoming! 4 exclamation marks. Spoiler alert, it's frick all. We'll hit the crowdfunding vibes with FOMO Mofo, and then we'll swing through a session with the voices in my head before giving someone the clap. On with the show. This last week in gaming, I had a very good week, all things considered. I was, of course, back to my day job, so all my leisure time was eaten up with having to work for a living so I can pay for more board games, which is the other end of the circle of life. And kicked off the week with the Fox and the Peanut returning back to My Island. My Island is, of course, the sequel to My City by Rainer Knizia. It's the legacy tile playing game where you flip a card, you place a tile, you flip a card, you place a tile, and huzzah, points, points, points. We are really enjoying it. We smashed through chapter 2, which is 3 more games. The Peanut is still killing it. She's absolutely got a brain for that sort of spatial puzzle. And we're having a lot of fun. I have heard that when you get to sort of chapter 6, 7, and 8, it gets a little crazy. I don't know much beyond that. But here's hoping that the Peanut can keep up, because she requests My Island every second day. My Island, more My Island, fantastic. Moved on to early in the week to even more Agamonia. I know I've talked at length about Agamonia. I'm not going to bore you with more, but I will tell you, more Agamonia is always a good thing. I am just about to kick my characters all up to level 3. Leveling up is fantastic in Agamonia. It's a really great moment where you get to choose new powers, choose new capabilities for each of your characters. You get to advance their own personal plot lines and their professions and all sorts of things. I'm playing Agamonia four-handed. I'm really enjoying it four-handed. I think I've said before, I probably should have done it three-handed, which would allow me to play it again with the other 3 characters, because the core box comes with 6 characters. But meh, I probably won't do a second playthrough on Agamonia. I'll probably just do the one. I'm through, I think, 6 or 8 scenarios, and there's 30-odd in the game. So I'm about a quarter of the way through. Really, really loving it. Can't recommend it enough. Played another game of Ark Nova. As you all know, Clappers, Ark Nova is one of my all-time favorite games. Watching the pending crowdfunding campaign for all the deluxe bits very closely. Not because I'm gagging for them, but I'm very interested to see where they go with it. Particularly if they do something like they did in Voidfall with those triple layer insert boards where you can slide your map in and it doesn't slide all over the place and it's a one box solution, all that fun stuff. Play with Super Trooper. He absolutely rinsed me by a serious margin, but I had a blast. I've only ever had one game of Agamonia where I tanked really badly. It will forever rest in the annals of Ark Nova, not Agamonia, at a bad game. I've only ever had one bad game Sunday morning. It's Sunday morning, and my brain's not braining. I've only ever had one bad game of Ark Nova. It wasn't even a bad game. It's just a game that I did badly in. It will forever be known as the shittest zoo of shit zoos. I had one chameleon, I think, at the end of the game. I just couldn't put the cards and whatnot together. I still had a great time that day. So, had a blast. Ark Nova. I think it's currently reached number 3 on the BGG All Times Game List, and I'm not sure it deserves to be number 3, but it certainly deserves to be up there. I really like Ark Nova, Super Trooper likes Ark Nova, and it's a perennial favorite. And following that, we had a very spontaneous game, and I know it's not the kind of game you might play spontaneously, but of Spirit Island. Super Trooper and I had a game day last weekend. And he said, oh, would you teach me Spirit Island? And of course I will. I love Spirit Island. I think Spirit Island's probably in my top 3, if not my top 5 games of all time for solo games, because it's an absolute masterwork of a game, and I love it solo. And I have to be honest, I'd never played it multiplayer before. I had been a part of teaching at multiplayer at PAX 2 years ago, PAX 2023. I assisted at the booth helping to teach Spirit Island just because I can. And Spirit Island is amazing. It's an amazing game. I own all the Uber Deluxe Spirit Island stuff. And as you'll know, I am not the most proficient board game teacher, but at least Spirit Island is a game that I play semi-regularly. Now, I hadn't played in quite some time, unfortunately, when we put Spirit Island on the table, but it did come back to me very, very quickly. We did not win. We were playing two of the very basic spirits, as it was Super Trooper's first Spirit Island game, and we weren't playing with any scenarios or any of the modifiers. We weren't playing with the event deck. It was just straight up Spirit Island. It's really excellent. It's challenging. It's all open information. I haven't talked about Spirit Island on the pod before. I really, really love Spirit Island, and I hadn't played in a while, and I think that's partly because of, you know, the cult of the new gets in the way of that sometimes, but it really reminded me why I love Spirit Island, and my sweet spot for Spirit Island is usually two-handed. I have played three-handed. I can do it if two of the spirits aren't too complicated, but two-handed is my sweet spot. So we played. We lost. We lost quite late in the game, so it wasn't like we got wiped from the board. But yeah, Spirit Island, great game. That's by Eric Royce, art by Jason Benke, Loic Berner, Loic Bilal. I mean, there's 15 trillion artists on Spirit Island. I mean, I'm looking at the list of artists. I would like to name them all. I can't. It's published by Greater Than Games, and Spirit Island has a multitude of expansions. I don't own every expansion. I own three or four of them, and so I have a lot of Spirit Island. I probably have 25 or so spirits to play, and I do love it. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Spirit Island is great. And beyond that, I went into a lot of little family games with the Peanut and the Fox. We've got a couple of little things I've talked about ad infinitum on here. I'm not going to bother with you that again. But yesterday, Super Trooper and I sequestered ourselves in the bunker, and we played 13 and a half hours straight of Aeon Trespass Odyssey. Whoa. It was a good day. We started at just, I think, 9, and I want to say it was about 10:30 when we packed it in. Probably could have gone a little further, but it was the right time to stop. We had six primordial battles in the day. We got hit, we just finished one with the Alpha Temenos, and if you fought the Alpha Temenos, he is a motherfucker. He is an absolute mofo and a half. And we just got like really lucky rolls, and I think we managed to take him out in round two just with sheer lucky rolls. But then we had a primordial battle later in the day where it was all coming down to, like, we were on our death knell. I think because we're playing two-handed each. My two Titans were dead. One of them had copped the absolute death blow in turn two that was just like, oh, you've got to roll a die. As long as you roll anything but a one, you're going to be okay. Well, I rolled one, didn't I? Yes, and so insta-death. So it goes. And it came down to, it was literally just Super Trooper on the map. He had two Titans left. One of them was knocked down. It was one Titan left, not looking very good. And he had to have the most power roll. It was really our chances were good. And he nailed it. And there was cheering and jubilation. It was huzzah! And the Primordial came down. I am absolutely loving every minute of ATO. I think the writing is exceptional. I think we're at least 20 or 30 hours into cycle one, and we're still going, oh, we're not getting that rule right. But 20 hours into cycle one is not even 10% into the game, right? There's five cycles, cycle one, two, and three. I think anecdotally, cycle five is as big as cycle two and three combined. So we're maybe 30 hours in, and we're still picking up rules that we're not smashing out. We're not getting them wrong to the point where, you know, we're cheating in the game, but we're still finding niggling rules. We're going, oh, have we noticed this bit here? And yesterday, you know, there were a couple of things that happened, and we did like a 2-hour retcon where we just went, well, if we'd worked out that this was the rule, we would have done this 2 hours ago. And so we wound it back, and we didn't wind the whole gameplay back. But I will tell you, we got a hair's breadth away from literally losing the campaign, which wouldn't be quite as painful as if we were sort of, I guess, another 20 or 30 hours in. But we were looking down at, there's a roll of a die, and if we didn't succeed that die roll, we were going to have to cheat if we wanted to keep going. We're going to have to go, right, well, technically we've lost the campaign, but I'm not convinced either one of us wants to replay the last 30 hours just to be above board. Maybe. I know I don't. If we'd lost the campaign, I would have looked at the lose resolution. Oh, and it's not even something. There's a beautiful resource you have in the game called a Sisyphus tier, which lets you turn back time and go and redo a whole battle. Because if that battle ends very, very badly, you can actually go back and redo the whole battle. This was not a scenario where we could have used a Sisyphus tier. It was literally going to end the campaign for us. And I've got to put hand on heart clappers and say, look, I am noble and ethical and do the right thing. But I'm not going to play the first 20, 30 hours all over again. If we lose, I think we just go, tick, we lost, but also we didn't. We're just going to keep going, probably. Watch this space. So we played ATO for a marathon day yesterday, getting up only to consume board games, appropriate food, and to, you know, refresh beverages, and to get rid of the food once it has probably moved its way through our entire system. It was awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Had a superb week for games. Cannot wait, literally, for another day of ATO like that. We've already put another one in the calendar for next month. Loving every minute of it. Absolutely. And that'll do it for the games that were this week. It doesn't seem like a lot, but oh man, it was a lot. It was probably, I probably got 25 hours of gaming in this week. Very happy. It's a very happy Hamez. Gets 25 hours of gaming in a week. My mental health is in a state of om. And those are the games that were. There is no incoming this week. Postman Pete is having to do his second job. He's running the drive-thru window around the corner because there's literally nothing shipping. And I refuse to mention the words Betrayal of the Second Era again. You've heard enough about it over the last 3 months. Betrayal of the Second Era. You keep hearing about this Elder Scrolls game that's coming and how excited I am for it. I am not going to mention Betrayal of the Second Era again until it's literally on the table. You heard that right. I will not be talking about Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era, the incoming Elder Scrolls release from Chip Theory Games that I'm very excited about, that merges my favorite IP with a version 2.0 of Too Many Bones mechanics, which is very exciting, but I will not mention it again. Betrayal of the Second Era. Okay, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. This week in FOMO MOFO, things are heating up again for 2025. As always, this is not an exhaustive list of games available on crowdfunding, but merely a selection of campaigns that appeal to me personally, either because I like the designer or publisher, because I love the gameplay, because it fills a void, an ever-shrinking void in my personal collection, or because the campaign has pretty toys. And I love it when it's all of the above. Starting off, Everdell has a new standalone game coming called Everdell Silver Frost. Now, I'm a good Canadian boy. I grew up in the prairies. I have seen enough snow to last a lifetime. When people say to me, oh, it must have been so nice growing up with all that snow and you build snowmen and snowballs and it's charming and you look out the window and there's icicles. No, it's snow. It's just trash every day. It's charming on day one. You go, this is great. Look at that. It's beautiful. And then day two, you realize you have to shovel it to actually leave your home. And on day three, oh, look, you've got to shovel it again. Day four, you've probably got to shovel it again on day four because otherwise you can't leave home. And oh, look, you've got to go out and you've actually got to put completely different tires on your car in the winter because if you don't, you're going to be in the ditch. You're going to write your car off and snow. If I never see another snowflake again in my entire life, I will still die happy. But Everdell Silver Frost, it's in the snowy part of Everdell. So you've got Farshore, which is the last standalone that came out, I want to say, probably 2 years ago. And Everdell Silverfrost, it's in a wintry space. Now, allegedly, and I haven't looked deeply into the gameplay yet because it only launched this week, it's a little bit heavier than Everdell. It's got some new mechanics. And it's got a new artist, Andrew Bosley, who did the art for Everdell, all the Everdell expansions. I think he even did the Farshore art. I can't recall. But the art is, when you look at it, you see it's Everdell. You know, in all the expansions, I mean, the art is absolutely recognizable. It's got a unique style and it's got a unique presence and it absolutely suits the game. Everdell Silverfrost has a new artist, which I think is both brave move, the right move. Not because Andrew Bosley's art is tired or uninteresting, but this is like the 10th, I don't know, but I'm going to say the 10th Everdell-esque release, if you take Everdell and all the Everdell expansions, of which there are a large number of them. And then you've got Farshore, and now you've got this one. It's probably more like 7 or 8, but it's let's say the 8th release of Everdell. Doing so with a new artist is kind of standing up and saying, look, we're not afraid to identify in a new vein here. So yes, it's Everdell. It's in the Everdell world. It's got a lot of the same Everdell visual, I guess, recognition, where you've got the equivalent of the meadow from Everdell, or you've got a very large prop in the middle of the table. You know, in Everdell, you've got the tree, which looks amazing, but is actually trash for gameplay because no one can sit behind the tree. And then in Farshore, you had the lighthouse, which stands there really doing nothing at all. At least on the tree, you stacked your meeples on it and you had a few cards on it and a few extra things. But the lighthouse in Farshore is literally just a, hey, I'm going to sit in the middle of your table doing 4/5 of bugger all, but I'm here. Well, now in Silverfrost, you have a mountain. And the mountain, I think, it stands up at the edge of the board and basically is like a movie screen at the back. So yeah, you're going to be playing at the end of the table if you're playing 4, because no one's going to be able to see past that mountain. But that said, it looks pretty cool. You know, there's some really interesting mechanics in that you've got to... It's not quite shoveling snow. I'm not saying shoveling snow is interesting, but I think you use fire, whether it's fire magic or Everdell flamethrowers. There's something to clear the snow out. And until you do, you can't build your tableau. I may have that not right. As I said, I've not gone down the rabbit hole in this, but I am in for a dollar because I want to be in potentially. The deluxe edition, which has all the nice resources and the little metal coins and all that stuff, is $112 Australian, which is, to be honest, perfectly reasonable for this caliber of game, with $30 shipping, which puts it at $142, which, you know, if you're not in Australia, you go, holy crap, OMC, you're spending $112 on an Everdell game? Hey, man, it's Australia, right? Like, a deck of cards is $26. Like, it's just, that's the way it is here. You know, I games under $100, there are plenty. You know, games like Harmonies and games like Cascadia and Land vs. Sea and Sagrada. But even, I think, Nekojima is $90. You know, Nekojima, which is that dexterity game I've spoken to you about. It wasn't $90 when I bought it. I bought it on, you know, pre-release at PAX. I got a special deal. But games are expensive. So to be honest, $142 for Everdell Silverfrost is probably not... It might be less than that retail when it comes out, because you're not paying the individual shipping. But you can flip a coin, because it might not. And also, you know, there's some really cool stuff in this. There are 3D beacons. So if there's a chance to light the beacons of Gondor in Everdell, I may just be convinced. I'm in for a dollar at this point. We'll see. Watch this space. Everdell Silverfrost, of course, is going to fund. It's already at $700,000 or something after 4 days. Everyone loves Everdell. I still love Everdell. It's at least once a year, I think, we put Everdell on the table. Super Trooper owns the all-in complete collection. So we always play with Belfair. We have played with Pearlbrook. We have played with... Is it New Leaf, which is the railway? You know, I still like Everdell. I think Everdell is a great game. I think the resources are really tight. And Everdell Silverfrost, you know, if it's Everdell-esque but different, as I said, if you put it on the shelf, it goes on the shelf first and it comes out 5 times in 5 or 6 years, I'm happy with that. Moving on to La Pâtisserie Rococo. This is a sequel of sorts to Rococo, and anything by Eagle Griffin Games gets my attention. I love Eagle Griffin's production. I don't own a lot of their catalog beyond the Lacerdas and Lacerda-esque stuff, because I'm a Lacerda whore, but their production is always fantastic. And I played Rococo, I want to say, maybe 14 months ago, so maybe a little bit less. Super Trooper owns Rococo. Well, technically Buttercup owns Rococo. Rococo doesn't leave the house, and you need permission in writing from Buttercup to touch Rococo because it's her baby. And when you see that, you can understand why. It is stunningly beautiful. It's a beautifully made game. And when it was first proposed, oh, hey, Hammers, let's play Rococo, I'm like, what, we're going to make dresses? Hey, I mean, I'll play anything once. It's a great game, Rococo. Like the gameplay, it feels almost like a slightly lighter Lacerda. Not quite Lacerda, but it's got that weighty feel to it. And the board presence is fantastic. The production is off the charts, of course, because it's Eagle Griffin. So this is the Rococo Patisserie, which is basically going to be managing your pastry chefs, managing your bakery. I am assuming it's going to be recipe fulfillment, resource management, that kind of stuff. The production quality looks fantastic. I am a chef. I'm also a pastry chef and a qualified butcher. So I'm not sure if I want to invest in a game that's going to feel like going to work. But at $75 Australian with Eagle Griffin production, shipping comes in another $30. So shipping's more than, what's that? That's 40% of the price. You know, I like to keep shipping around the 20-25%. But really, if the game's only $75, we're talking about $75 Australian, that's pretty good, you know. And again, it's going to put it at $105. And you can absolutely guarantee that this game's going to be more than $105 when it hits Australian shores in 23 years. I know Buttercup's a mad Rococo fan, so I'm quietly hopeful that this will hit Super Trooper's doorstep sometime before it hits retail in Australia, which may be, if we're lucky, before I retire, retail releases in Australia. We are very lucky with crowdfunding because we are very close. We're only a 2-week sail from China, so we typically get all the crowdfunding stuff before the rest of the world. But we get retail very, very late. We're still waiting for things like SETI and River Valley Glassworks. And Daitoshi was only just released in Australia last week, that kind of stuff. So we get stuff very late. It won't be 23 years, but it'll be late. Darwin's Journey Oceania is live and it looks great. While it's an expansion, it provides, I think, from the looks of it, an entirely new board. So if you want to play with these expansions, with the Oceania expansion, you replace the board, which I love. I don't mind, you know, we play Dune Imperium now. We pulled Dune Imperium out because I've got all the expansions. There's like there's three overlays for the main board. And then there's two new sideboards that go out and it's fine. But Darwin's Journey Oceania is like, well, if you want to play with the expansions, we've just done the work for you. Here's a new board, stuff it. And I think that's really cool. The base game's pitched at $60. Well, the base expansion rather, I should say. I don't think from the looks of it you can play this without the original Darwin's Journey, is $60. But what they've done, and I get why they've done it, because hashtag marketing, is they've put a ton of mini expansions separately. So you get the Oceania pack for $60, but if you want the Komodo Dragon upgrade, if you want there's four or five little mini expansions that tack onto it, it all ends up adding up to about $120. And now that's for... There's gameplay expansions in there, and there's pretty things in there. You know, there's quality of life upgrades. You may hear the cicadas have decided now is the time, just now, to raise their voices in protest. They're still going, yes. So if you can hear that drone and whine in the background, my apologies. Hopefully they die soon. I am doing a dance every night and burning incense outside to the local gods to help them move on. Anyway, back to Darwin's Journey. It's a lot for an expansion. That's $120 if you've got the deluxe Darwin's Journey base game. If you want the deluxe version of the expansion, you're looking at $120. And unless I've written something down wrong, there's another $30 shipping on top of that. So you're basically looking at $150 Australian for the Darwin's Journey expansion with all the toys. That's a lot for an expansion. Now, I think from memory, Super Troopers put in for $1 on this to just track it and see how it's going and look for maybe some more early reviews and commentary on it before he goes in on it. And I get that, you know, you can't have the Darwin's Journey Deluxe Edition and then overlay the totally unplayable base edition. I mean, you can, absolutely you can, but we wouldn't. So I get that before he sort of leaps into that, he wants to really see all the bits and pieces. And to be honest, it's entirely likely that the pledge manager will move over to GameFound, which means you're going to be able to pay it in 5 installments or something anyway. But I'm hoping he picks it up, but I will understand if he doesn't. It does look great. If you love Darwin's Journey and you play a fair bit of Darwin's Journey, it's not that we play a fair bit, but I think it's a great game. I think you're going to be stuck having two boxes for it from the looks of it. You've got the expansion box and the core box because the expansion is going to come in its own space. But Darwin's Journey... If you love Darwin's Journey, it's more Darwin's Journey, and Darwin's Journey is a great game. Now, checking up on some stuff that we talked about recently that hadn't quite gone live, Masters of Orion is live. It's doing really well. Masters of Orion is done by, I might get this wrong, I'm going to say Arkane Games, who did Might and Magic 3. It's doing really well, not in the millions yet, but it's going fine. It's not for me, but it does look like a great production. It's space, pew pew, and Ion Core. Ion Core is not doing well. I don't know why, because if it's money, you know, if it's that post-Christmas slump, Ion Core, I don't think it's cracked 35,000 euros for its whole campaign. So I'm not sure, even if that funds, I think it's a risky one to be backing, because there's not a lot of extra money in there, and there's certainly no economies of scale. But if they're your thing, hop on them. They're live now. The Dice Tower has their annual crowdfunding campaign out. The Dice Tower is... God, if you don't know the Dice Tower, like... I'm not going to bother with that. So, the team at the Dice Tower have their annual crowdfunding campaign full of goodies, unique promo cards. The prices are fine. There's lots of fun stuff in there. There's dice, there's plushies, there's play mats, there's coasters. And it's a thing they do to help fundraise, to support what they do. The Dice Tower has given a lot to this industry for a lot of years. And so I'll be having a look to just see if there's any, you know, promos that suit the games I have, or maybe if I look at certain promo sets, because they all come in sets, not individually, which makes sense. You're not going to sell a card for 90 cents and then ship it to Australia. But if there's maybe some promo sets that I know overlap in our game group, I might pick up a couple of them, because I'm very happy to support the work they do. I get a lot of joy out of the Dice Tower. I spend a lot of time watching their videos. And so the Dice Tower, they do it every year. And lastly, it's now the season of Pledge Managers. So as your wallet slowly recharges, very slowly from the Christmas season, you are spoiled for choice on Pledge Managers, because everything that was out last year that we all looked at and said, are you mad? It's 5 weeks to Christmas. Of course, it's all funded. And in some cases, the prices have nudged up a little bit, but most of them are on GameFound if they weren't already, which we all love, because GameFound has stretch pay, which allows you to pay in installments. You've got, I said, you're spoiled for choice. The Puerto Rico Special Edition, which I have looked at on again, off again, on again, off again. And if I want the really beautiful All the Toys Edition, I'm not going to lie, I think it's $350 Australian. And as much as it looks great, and I think it would be fantastic on the table, I can't part with $350 for Puerto Rico. But if Puerto Rico is one of your games that you've played many, many, many times, I was talking to Paul Grogan the other day, and he said he's probably clocked up 300 plays of Puerto Rico. If you're that guy, well, then $350 is really nothing. You know, and it does look amazing. It really does look amazing. The bits that come with it, fantastic. Pledge Managers are also out for Speakeasy by Lacerda, Avalon the Riven Vale. I mean, if you just go search Pledge Manager, you can go to GameFound and just literally type in Pledge Manager. It will spit out everything that's in Late Pledge or Pledge Manager. And you are spoiled for choice. And to be honest, they'll probably be open for months. You know, the Pledge Manager will be open for months. So things like Enormity, which funded last year, the Pledge Manager won't even be open for another 3 months on that. And then you'll have access to Stretch Pay. So there's all kinds of stuff coming. And good luck with that. Because if there's anything I didn't back, because I showed power and strength and resilience, and my wallet was empty, I now look at the Pledge Managers and go, oh, that's only like $30 a month. I could probably do that. Maybe. We'll see. The FOMO is real. Clappers, the FOMO is real. This week in Voices in My Head, I want to have a chat. I know it's not really a chat, it's a one-way, it's a blather, it's a dump, it's whatever it is. About the rise of AI. And this is on the back of all the furor surrounding, and this is only the most recent victim of this, the furor surrounding Foxpaw, which is a game that's currently on GameFound. And I am not here to pick on Foxpaw. It's topical because Foxpaw is a game that's on GameFound. And for some or part of their pre-release, they used some AI art. And I believe I'm not attached to the program, I'm not attached to the campaign, I'm not attached to anyone in the campaign at all or GameFound. And I'm just reading what I can read, what I can get my hands on as a consumer, that their intent was or is to have the AI art that was used in the campaign replaced by art done by human artists before the game is released. And that's great. You know, we'll get to my own opinions on AI art in a little bit. But the recent furor around what's been happening with FoxPaw is what's prompted this. And because AI is here to stay. It's here to stay. Awakened Realms just released an AI bot to help you with their games, which I think is amazing. It's an app you can download, and they, if you've got a rules question or an edge case question, you can pump it in there, and the AI bot will search everything and come back to you and go, hey, this is what you do here, which, honestly, I think is wonderful. It's free, doesn't cost you anything. AI is here to stay. It's 2025. We cannot put the genie back in the bottle. So I want to talk about AI, and in particular, we're going to talk about AI art, you know, because art, up until now, has been an absolutely viable career. My eldest daughter, Lou, has had a life as an artist. She's just finished high school and is about to go into college. And it was absolutely her intent to go into graphic design for the last 2 years, because she is an artist at heart. She is an artist of multimedia, of paints and 3D and carving and sculpting, and certainly as an illustrator. And her art is exceptional. And, you know, she got in touch with the local colleges and said, this is what I want to do. I want to go into graphics design, and I'll go into graphics design as an illustrator with potentially specializing in multimedia. And the college went, wonderful. Here's the program we have. And to the college's credit, they then said, but you need to understand that while we are happy to give you these skills, the current trajectory for this program is that it's a dead end, in that it will be nigh on impossible for you to get a meaningful career out of this skill. And now this is the college. This is a public college. This is not a private college. This is the government college here in Australia. It's referred to as TAFE. And I have to take my hat off to them for their transparency, for their candor, and for their trying to interrupt a career trajectory which potentially has no outcomes. And the colleges we have here, they're very much built on employable outcomes. They don't deliver courses that don't have a job waiting for you at the end. And currently there is a job, and they're very clear. It's like, right now you can go get a work as a graphics designer, you can go and do this sort of thing. But with their projections are that this as a career is going to be very, very different. And that's because of the rise of AI. Now, as it turns out, Lou is had a pivot. She's going to go into a different program and a different career path, with some mild disappointment, but also with a whole lot of gratitude for not having spent a year and a half going down this path to then find out that, well, there are jobs, but there's only 15% of the jobs that there were 2 years ago, and they're very different, because now as a graphics designer, you have to learn to work with AI. AI as a career path, it's not that, and this is only, again, my perspective, I'm not Nostradamus, I'm not here to tell you what to do or shouldn't do, I'm just saying what it looks like. It's not that AI is going to disappear as a career path, but graphics design artists in particular are going to have to learn to be the users of AI. And the reason for this is AI can do something in seconds that would take a graphics design artist hours to do. Now, I want to put hand on heart and preface all of this by saying all the art and everything I use, all my podcast covers, all my logos for OMC, I used AI. And that's because One Man Clapping is not a monetized podcast. There is no money coming into this from any source anywhere. There's no sponsorship, there's no donations, there's no Patreon, there's no monetization. And that's not to say it won't be at one point, but it's not. And as such, I don't have any money to pay an artist. My daughter is an artist. I offered her money to do my logos and graphics. And she went, yeah, that'd be interesting. And 3 weeks later, she's a teenager, 3 weeks later, do you think you might look at this? Yeah. And then 6 weeks later, I'm like, look, hon, I don't have any more time in the tank to do this. Now, to go to an external graphic design artist would cost me thousands. I don't have thousands, right? This is a passion project. This is my therapy session, dear clappers. And so everything that has to be spent on OMC, from hosting to distribution to whatever I need to have, comes out of my board game spending account, which is fine. But that's my choice. So our logo, the One Man Clapping logo, the purple dye. I mean, you can see it's AI. You can look at it. You can see it's AI. AI is absolutely clearly identifiable. The music, our intro music, is AI music. Now, that was not done by a free program. I bought a license with a company that specializes in music, and I actually spent 4 days working with that AI because I had to learn how to tell it what I wanted. You know, and it started off with, give me a podcast intro in the style of a hard rock cross punk. And, you know, to the credit of this particular company, I could not put in there, give me a Green Day intro. Right. It's like, well, we can't do that. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to create music for you. We're not here to kill artists. I'm like, oh, well, I respect that. That's great. So I had to refine my language over the course of 4 days to get to a point where it was putting out something that I was very happy with. And I had a choice. I could write my own lyrics. It could write the lyrics for me. It could write lyrics and I could moderate them. And it was several days. I love our intro music. I think it's great. It's unique. It's not, it doesn't sound like anyone in particular, which I also like, because you don't listen to that and go, oh, that sounds like Third Eye Blind. I don't know, whatever. So I have used AI quite a bit to get OMC launched. And I will probably continue to use AI because, as I said, there is no money coming in. This is not a money endeavor. This is a project of love. That said, my own thoughts on AI art, you know, I as a young person, I was very much an artist as well. I worked in the creative endeavors. Being a chef and a pastry chef is a creative endeavor, and I believe in creativity and expressing creativity. I think AI art is pretty soulless. I think it's great that it is. I think it lacks personality. I think AI art, you can usually look at AI art and go, oh, that's AI art. That's a really good thing for now. I don't know that it's going to stay that way, but AI art lacks personality. You know, compared to looking at a game, for example, by Ian O'Toole or Vincent Dutre or Andrew Bosley or Manny Tremblay or any of the myriad of other working artists, you know, Beth Sobel, you know, you look at their work, you go, oh, that's a Beth Sobel. That's an Ian O'Toole. Ian O'Toole has done so many different styles of games, you know, everything from Pompero to Black Angel to Nemo's War. But yet you can kind of look at it and go, even though they're different styles and the boxes are very different, you kind of go, yeah, I can see that's an Ian O'Toole box. Manny Tremblay, you can pick Manny Tremblay out from space. You know, he's Dice Throne and Wonderland's War and Tanglewoods and Neon. And you're like, yeah, that's Manny Tremblay art. And it's really great. And that is wonderful. And I think that should absolutely continue. And it needs to continue because these are people that have contributed to this hobby in such a meaningful way. And brought joy. I mean, the art on a game for me, I have played games that have soulless art. You know, Smartphone Inc. It looks like Spreadsheet the game. It looks like you're going to watch paint dry for an hour and a half. But it's a really, really great game with a lot going on. And it's very deep and thinking and meaningful and super, super fun. But when I put Weather Machine on the table with that steampunk, diesel punk, I just go, oh, yeah, and I'm creating a machine that's going to change the weather or a fixing machine that's falling apart. You know, I love good art in a game. I really, really do love good art in a game. So where does that bring us? You know, I use AI, and I use AI because without using AI for OMC, there would be no OMC, or you would have very, very Spartan, very basic graphic work. You'd have very Spartan, there'd be no music, or there would be stock music. I'd be paying a license fee for stock music, which would be fine too, you know, but it would be something very, very basic. I want to overlay this with my experience as a small business owner, because in one of my iterations in my life, I owned a gourmet burger restaurant, which eventually had two locations and a portable pop-up that we would take around to food markets and whatnot, and I loved it. It was a labor of love that ended up doing quite well in the end, sold in the middle of COVID, but loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it. And there were a lot of things that I had to do to get that business off the ground as a small business owner because I couldn't afford to pay someone else to do it. The logo work, I did farm it out to a company that specializes in logo design. But I can tell you, when you start your own business, you are so tight for money that if AI was an option to me at that time, I absolutely would have lent on it. If AI was an option to me to design my menus, I would have lent on it. Now, I luckily had a very great relationship with a very talented commercial graphics design artist who had very reasonable fees. And so I did have professional graphics design for all my menus, for all my websites. I had professional photographers come in to do the photos for the food, and they were amazing. Absolutely amazing. But when you're starting your own business, you're not usually doing so for any reason other than you really, really want to. You know, it's really important to you. It was one of my, I'm a one percenter chef. I work right at the top of the, I have in my career worked right at the top of the game. I do things that very few people can do from a culinary and management point of view. I'm very happy that I've had those opportunities. But it was always one of my longstanding dreams to make beautiful burgers for people that enjoy them. And we did. We made beautiful burgers. And I couldn't have done that unless I did everything myself. It would not have happened, right? Let's now apply that to the guy in his garage who wants to make a game. And he's had this dream to make a board game for 5 years. He's been working on it. He's been working on it. And he needs art. He needs art for the board game. And he can go and engage with a professional artist. And he engages with somebody new to the industry, maybe, who's up and coming. But then potentially gets art that is not quite right. It's not quite in the right tone. Or he gets in line for someone like an Ian O'Toole, who works on games for sometimes up to 2 years. So you can imagine his pipeline for working on things is very, very long. And I'd like to think that Ian O'Toole is quite expensive because his art's amazing. And I'm not saying it is. I've had a couple of in-person chats with Ian O'Toole. He's a gentleman and very sharing of his time. But I would never deign to weigh in on how much I think his art's worth. I'd like to hope that he's charging a very high price because his art is exceptional. I don't know, though. So you're a small designer. You are creating a game and you're like, oh, look, I can't afford an artist. I'm going to go just let's play with AI and see what we can do. Oh, it's not bad. It's not bad. I mean, there's a game that just funded. I think it was called Under Our Sun. It just delivered, basically not funded. It's a post-apocalyptic game. If you look at that game, I'm pretty sure that's all AI art. And I think they actually copped a similar spraying to Foxpaw did. Maybe not. I think if you look at that, it looks like AI art. If it's not AI art, then it's a graphics design artist that is using AI to assist us, I would think. So you're a small game designer. You want to get your game off the ground and you want to use AI because that's your option. You're not an artist. You're a nerdy spreadsheet guy and you can make plans for games and weigh out all your components. By weigh out, I'm talking about making sure everything's balanced and you can do all that and you can play test. But you're not an artist and you can't draw and you have no capability and you don't know anyone that can help you out for a deal because that's often how these things happen. So you go to AI and then you put your game up and the world explodes with rage. Okay, now I'm not that saying that the company that's doing Foxpaw is some guy in his garage. They are, I think it's Godot Games. They have, I think, a couple other games under their belt. I know they recently did Among Cultists, which is a board game version of Among Us. I don't know if they used AI art in Among Cultists. I have no idea. To be honest, I don't care. But let's now overlay this on the Foxpaw issue. So you've got a company which is driven by people who are passionate about what they do. Okay? And I'm going to make that assumption because otherwise they wouldn't be putting themselves out there. They wouldn't be bothering with this because this isn't Bitcoin mining. This is a gamble. You're going to create a game. You're going to put it out there. You're going to hope that the external pressures in the world, the economic pressures as you move through funding to production to distribution, don't increase so much that you end up losing your shirt in the deal. And the world explodes. I'm not here to talk about Foxpaw in particular, but I want to talk about this as an example. So Foxpaw, this came out and the notion of AR came out. And then BGG exploded with review bombing. And if you don't know what review bombing is, it's when potentially hundreds of people hop on and they leave a 1-star, 1 out of 10 review for your game because they don't like something about it. The game hasn't even come out yet. Now, I don't throw a lot of stock into BGG ratings, but Board Game Geek is a meaningful thing. It's a meaningful tool for companies and people that make games to help their games be more successful. The games that are successful are games that, or most of the games that, not most, let's wind it back. Many of the games that are successful because they've leveraged Board Game Geek in a positive way. Whether they've managed to get onto the BGG hotness list, whether they've managed to get some good ratings in there. So if 150 or 250 or 500 people hop on and they review bomb a game that hasn't even come out, it's not got any hope. You've basically taken something that somebody wants to, now, yes, they want to make money out of it, but there are people, if this is Godot, if Godot Games is 100% game design, which given this is their second game, they're probably not. But if they are, well, then they're feeding their children, they're clothing their children, they're paying their mortgage, they are gambling everything with this. And when we review bomb them, we are playing with their lives, literally. You know, I've worked in high level management for a long time, right? I have a master's degree in strategic HR. I've worked in the HR space, and I love it, and I love managing people. And I've had to, in my life, fire people as part of my job. And it's a very hard thing to do because you are taking away their, even people who are not good at their job and really need to be fired, you are taking away their ability to pay their bills. And that's not a role that should be taken lightly. Now, I'm not here to lecture. I'm not lecturing anyone on review bombing, right? I wouldn't do it. This is not a lecture. If you've left a one-star review for Foxpaw, that is your right. There's no judgment in this. I'm just talking from my vantage point, clappers, so just bear with me. So review bombing is going to, much like firing someone, meaningfully reduce someone's ability to live if they're counting on this as their primary source of income. And even if it's not their primary source of income, if this is something that they are doing on the side, they have invested thousands and thousands and thousands of their own money, thousands of dollars of their own money, to try and get this off the ground because they believe in it. And for whatever reason, they've used AI. If they're a one-man show or they are in an area where there are no artists that they can rely on reliably, you know, because you want to have a tangible relationship with your artists. What's the answer? You know, and for my own two cents, I think the answer is twofold. And I'm not talking now about Foxpaw because I've not gone down the rabbit hole of reading everything they've released and reading every response they've made out. So I'm now not talking about Foxpaw. I'm now talking about AI involved in gaming and board gaming in general, particularly with respect to arts and artists. Because here's what I think. I think the twofold answer is it requires one, and this is probably the most important, it requires transparency by the developer, distributor, designer team. Guys, we are using AI art. This is why we're using AI art. Share your story. Tell us the story. I'm using AI art because this has been a passion project for 6 years, and this is what we need to do to get this game off the ground. We would love to be using artists, but we're going to rely on AI art. So it requires transparency up front. And the other part it requires is kindness by the public, right? We need to understand that sometimes this is something that people have to do what they want and what they need to do. And we get to choose. We get to choose. We get to choose two things. We get to choose whether or not we want to treat this with kindness, and we get to choose whether or not we want to invest in a game that uses AI art. Now, would Foxpaw, as a specific example, have crowdfunded more than its current trajectory with in-house artists, or if they'd had artists and hadn't, you know, dealt with this sort of lashback for using AI art? Maybe. But the one thing I want to flag as somebody who's launched their own business and their own passion project is that bill has to be paid up front. You have to pay that before you even start. And it's literally gambling because you don't know how well your game is going to be received. You can do all the playtesting in the world. You can do all the sampling and tabletop simulator and gathering all the information you like. It's literally gambling. And I have nothing but the absolute utmost respect for anyone who's trying to create something, whatever it is, within their means. Because while they're using AI art and they may be doing someone out of a job, it's likely they're using AI art because they can't afford the artist. And should they then, I'm not going to get into the ethical conundrum of, well, should you be in a business if you can't afford to be in the business the right way? Because then we get into ethics, and ethics goes across all kinds of things, right down to sustainability. Should we be buying stuff that's made of plastic, right? If you can't afford to make your stuff out of wood and recycled products and cardboard and whatever else, well, should you be making them at all? And I'm not here to, I'm not going to open that can of worms. I'm not interested. And it's not, I don't think it's a valuable argument. And so the argument of, well, should they be making a game at all if they can't use artists is not one I'm here to promote. I am just sharing my unique vantage point and how my life experiences could be overlaid on this to maybe just have us all looking at it a little bit differently. So what if in 2025, the greatest board game that could ever be made is not made because the designer can't afford an artist and he's too terrified to lean on AI to bring this game that he's maybe been working on for 10 years. What if the next Tigris and Euphrates or the next Brass or the next Gloomhaven dies in someone's garage because they're terrified of the backlash and they just don't have the means to pay up front for the art? Well, we did that. We did that. And look, we all have a choice. We choose what game to buy based on our own deeply personal needs and metrics. If you don't want to support AI, then join the Luddites and smash the looms, right? Or maybe just don't buy the game. Raising three daughters, my mandate in the house is kindness is free, you know, and hatred and intolerance is also free, but kindness is free. And so if I don't want to buy something because I don't like something that the developer's done, I'm okay with that. I won't buy it. If I don't want to buy a game because I don't like the gameplay, well, then I'm not going to buy it. I have my own metrics and my own choice matrix of how I choose what games I want to buy. And if you don't want to support AI, then the best thing you can do is just not buy the game. But I can guarantee you, in 10 years, you're not going to be able to tell the difference between human-created art and AI art. This is evolving at exceptional rates, you know, and there's a real melancholy sadness attached to that. Absolutely. But artists in the new world need to brace and prepare for that, right? It's like the weavers in the Industrial Revolution, they needed to grow and change and learn how to integrate with the new technology and make it theirs and own it. We get to choose how we spend our money. We also get to choose how to behave, and I choose kindness for one. And if I don't want to buy a game because of AI art, then I won't buy the game. Would I buy a game with AI art? If the developer, designer, distributor were transparent and honest, and I felt that their narrative was believable, and I liked the game mechanics? Absolutely. I'm not buying Foxpaw. Foxpaw's not for me. Not because of the alleged engagement with AI art, but because I'm not attracted to the gameplay. That's my choice. Choose wisely, OMC crew. This is not a lecture. This is just a plea from a middle-aged man who looks at the world and thinks that a little more tolerance, a little more kindness would go a long, long way. And I would hate to think that somebody who could create an amazing game is unable to do so because we've created fear. Anyway, that's it. AI art. Skynet is here. We need to embrace our new overlords. Now on to the clap. This week, I am going to give the clap to, and this is a double-edged sword. So this week, the clap goes to Metal Gaming Coins. Okay, and you're just going to have to just sit through this one. You might think, well, what are you doing, Hammers? Metal Gaming Coins, wait. We literally have metal coins in society, right? Metal gaming coins are the stupidest upgrade in gaming. I'm calling it's so stupid, so mind-numbingly stupid, metal gaming coins, right? We literally have coins. If I want to replace cardboard coins with metal coins, I could, if I want different ones, I can get Chinese coins, I can get Russian coins, I can get Afghani coins for basically the price of money. I mean, I can get 100 pennies for a dollar, easy peasy. But so lame, right? Like, who wants to play with pennies and 20-cent pieces, right? Instead, I'm paying $40 for 30 coins that are special or themed. They have a little dragon on them. They're ink washed. Why? Because I'm clearly special. And I don't mean, like, unique. I mean helmet in the shower special. So here's to you, metal coins. Literally the stupidest thing in board gaming. But, oh man, I love you. I love metal coins. I literally have 15 sets of them. So this clap is both it's both praise and a complete dumping on. What can I say? Uncomplicated. And that concludes this week's brain dump. Thank you for the therapy session. You can reach me on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can email me at wonmanclapping@gmail.com. You can Instagram me at @OneManClapping. You can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BoardGameGeek. Subscribe to Guild 4426. And soon, honestly soon, you can help OMC by dropping a like on Facebook or Instagram. That really helps our metrics. It also means that once we get to a certain number of likes and followers on Facebook, I can start doing live content and video content. That's locked until we get to a certain number of subscribers and likers and followers. Or you can leave a review on whatever platform you choose for the podcast. If it's a bad review, that's fine too. I do this for me. You guys are just along for the ride. Thank you as always for your time. This week's episode has been brought to you by tinnitus, the ailment for the middle-aged. I can't tell anymore if it's cicadas, planes overhead, or just the ever-ringing bells in my brain. Thank you so much. Being 50 has so many benefits. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. And remember, we can choose how to spend our money. We can choose how to express our opinions. But I always choose you. And if you get that, we can be friends. Peace out, mofos. Locked in the bunker, shadows shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pound and hearts they quake.